SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
Very good Wednesday, race fans. Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964 if you're listening to Sirius XM online and at our website as well, stevebick.com. And just listening in to the end of yesterday, and really a fun opportunity to have those two conversations, Bill Llewellyn and Jane Lyon. And the Jane Lyon visit, I thought, I don't know, maybe we'll get, you know, I knew I could ask her a lot of different things and talk about the development of her program, but she was very generous. She had that luncheon for Children's Hospital to go to, and I all of a sudden I looked up and it was almost, you know, it had been almost an hour. So I really, really appreciate it. And, you know, people that observe breeders and, you know, watch their programs develop, I know how much they enjoy hearing from people like Jane. And then on the flip side, an owner team, a father-son owner team in the Llewellyns that, you know, started at the claiming game. And you know, there's any number. I mean, so many operations start that way and grow into, morph into different, you know, different kind of racing and sometimes breeding operations. So you heard how, you know, they've got a small, you know, small breeding side, and they've managed to, you know, breed Louisiana bred stake winner and so forth. So that's one of the things I personally enjoy and will use. Part of that conversation, those two conversations, a little bit of a reference point to Sid Fernando's visit this morning. And we got a terrific question that came in. Glenn Atkinson, who breeds himself, and I think he's got a couple of mares, and he had a great question. And so we'll weave it all together. And there's actually a result from the weekend that figures in, and I was quite pleased. I saw where our friend Joe, Smoking Joe McKay, Joe had cashed on Classic Fit in the Hut on Saturday at Gulfstream. And Classic Fit is a really interesting breeding footnote for a bunch of reasons, and not the least of which is fitting into, you know, part of today's discussions with Sid. And Classic Fit is a daughter of Love Style, a forestry mare, True Style, I should say, out of Love Style. And Love Style, sister of, or dam of, Scat Daddy. So here's a daughter in Classic Fit, the stake winner from Mike Stidham and Godolphin. She is the third of four Bernardini offspring. True Style has been taken to Bernardini four times. And I'm anxious for Sid to talk about this, and it's part of the question that Glenn Atkinson asked about, you know, going right back to the same sire, you know, 2 years in a row, and how, you know, how to make those decisions. So the great topic for Sid. And it just so happened, as I was doing the, you know, some of the the backstory work that you look at a chart, you look at a family, then you go look at the dam and all the different rabbit holes. And I kind of struck on classic fit, and I was curious. So I started poking around, and I see that that Godolphin is determined, and there's something that they like about Bernardini paired up with this sister of Scat Daddy. And so it could just be the cross. There's something there that I want Sid to explore. And actually, in that hut, there's still some results we didn't get to yet. We were so focused in on being in California on Monday. And yesterday was a question of, getting back into the swing after the trip home. But there's still some results to dive into, and I want to get through, including that hut. And Stidham ran 1-2 in there, and as it happens, Classic Fit was the much longer. It was 14-1. The other Stidham, Sweet Diane, who looked like she could be one of the favorites, went off, I think, as third choice, and she ran a good second in here at a little under 4-1. But those other stakes, actually, at Gulfstream, while we're on this topic, Ron Spatz and Monarch, they won the house party with Bye Bye Jay, 13-2, paid $14.80. And this a Arkansas bred, as it happens. How about that? You had the Buffalo Man, the 2-year-old boys race going short, Fed Biz, Pitchy Investments, and Victor Barboza sent out Zenden as the 3-2 favorite. FedBiz Colt out of Sharp Humor Mare, bred by the Harrises, Brent and Beth. You had Garter and Ty, 4-5 winner of the Smooth Air. This was the 1 mile, 2-year-old race. Ralph Nix for Jacks Are Better. This, of course, a homebred. Brooks in Town out of an Aniseed Mare. Cassie and Mrs. Weber second, with Super Jackpot, it was a good weekend for Live Oak. A couple of good performances from the 2-year-olds. Got a maiden winner up at Woodbine as well. And then in the pulpit, Henley's Joy, and this is the nice Mike Maker, Jeff Bloom, Kitten's Joy Colt, going a mile on the grass. It was an easy winner at basically 3-2. And then the other, the Wait a While for the fillies, going a mile on the grass. Pat Biancone for Coolmore and Linda Shanahan. Were your winners. So that was the rest of those stakes that accompanied the Classico del Caribe, and we had mentioned it came up on Monday. Michigas, the include gelding, he's now 5, and of course Art German had him for his early career, and he ended up in Puerto Rico and has been really good. And he came back, won that Invitational Cup. Trainer Oscar, owner Oscar Diaz and trainer Jose Velez. Brigantia, Panamanian bred, under Luis Saez, 1540. The Concerto filly, that was in the Lady Caribbean Cup. Favorite faded in here and got swamped at 3-2. But Alberto Paz Rodriguez, who also owns, and the Caribbean Cup Speed, Big Boris won. Second choice, a Jupiter Pluvius colt, 3-year-old, Juanavilla trains. And you had the two Fausto Gutierrez successes. There was not just Kukulkin, the big winner of the Classic. There was also Jala Jala, or Hala Hala. And of course, these two Mexican breds. Kukulkin was 30 cents on the dollar. Jala Jala, close to 3-2. Rat Ortiz riding for Gutierrez. I think that was it. There you go. So I can dispense with the Caribbean Cup. And they turned into a nice day. It's a nice fit on the calendar. It starts out with the Claiming Crown, the first opening weekend at Gulfstream, then into this Caribbean Cup. And then drawing today the big stakes card for Saturday with the Fort Lauderdale, the Harlan's Holiday. Some preps in there, notably Audible for Pegasus. My Charmer, the Fillies and Mares on the grass, and the Rampart as well. The Good Mile on the main for Fillies and Mares, and the Sugar Swirl, the Sprint. So the first graded stake weekend of the season at Gulfstream on Saturday. That card will come together today. They put together the slate for the Springboard Mile card at Remington on Sunday. And it's a competitive race, this Springboard Mile. Points. This race is knocking on the door, has been knocking on the door for grading. Remington putting up 400,000, and the 1 mile put together a nice group. Certainly Steve Asmussen attacking this. He's got five in here. And honestly, I don't see where Asmussen's runners, the New York bred, might be the best of them. The Winchell Willis Horton Central Banker Colt. This would be very big for Central Banker and McMahon and company. Should Central Banker win a race like this with one of his 2-year-olds as the year winds down? But I thought Kelly Breen with the last out wire to wire winner, Epic Dreamer, the Orb Colt, was second to Vekoma in his debut. It looks to me like he's your favorite. Paul Holtis has got a nice horse in here. The Trap Shot. Gelding, six shooter. Looks okay. Rateable, coming off a mile win off the turf at Churchill. Broke his maiden in Indiana and did it well. Six shooter. It's a good race. Long range Teddy for Willis Horton. A homebred for Mr. Horton. Won the Clever Trevor, prepping for this. So, you also got the Trapeze, you've got the She's All In, you got some Oklahoma bred stakes like the Jim Thorpe. Love that. Andy Serling early today. Andy was busy traveling or something yesterday. So, Andy today, Pete Fornatel, Sid Fernando, Seth Merrow, and more. Just getting going at the races, Sirius XM.
Latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Daytime Southern California thoroughbred racing action continues Thursday through Sunday at Los Alamitos Racecourse with more stakes action coming up on December 15th and 16th. First post is 1 p.m. on weekdays and 12:30 p.m. on weekends Pacific Time. The weekend action will feature the Soviet Problem Stakes on Saturday, December 15th, and the King Glorious on Sunday, December 16th. All of the top names will be here through our closing day on Sunday, December 16th. Racing fans, the $1 Los Alamitos Pick Fours continues. The wager has been well received and the pools figure to grow. Los Alamitos also features a traditional Pick Six wager. And when the sun goes down, the lights turn on at Los Alamitos with nighttime quarter horse and thoroughbred racing action every Friday through Sunday night. Join us on track or at your favorite satellite or ADW provider. Great racing is in store at Los Alamitos Racecourse through our closing day on Sunday, December 16th. Let's go! For more info, go to losalamitos.com.
Hi, this is retired race caller Tom Durkin. So, after this year's Derby, I stopped by Top Round Roast Beef on Shelbyville Road in St. Matthews. I got two sandwiches, one for back at the hotel and another for the trip back home to New York. The first one was so good, I had the other one right there. Certified Angus beef, roasted 5 hours, each one made to order. You can taste the difference. Top Round Roast Beef, Shelbyville Road, St. Matthews. Tell them Tom Durkin sent you. Oh, by the way, try the frozen custard too.
There's more good news about Pennsylvania's breeding program. Last year, the number of state-bred live foals rose by nearly 30%. Many other states saw a drop of between 10 and 20%. This says that Pennsylvania truly has North America's fastest-growing and most lucrative breeding program. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at PABred.com.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Back at the races, a little past 15 into hour one on this Wednesday, and Casey reaching for the Keep Me Warm classic and jazzed up, but I guess below 50 in South Florida, so it's cold up here, but listen, it's winter. Andy Serling, good morning.
Morning, Steve. How are you?
I'm good. Good.
I'm going to warn people. I'm boiling some water, so my tea kettle's going to go off in a few minutes. So I hope nobody's too offended by that.
All right. Is there going to be scone? Is there going to be some scone chomping?
There's no food. There's just going to be tea. Okay? Letting people know now. They need to turn the radios off. Computers or whatever it is.
What do you feel is your most egregious transgression in these visits? Is it the yawning
coming on?
Yeah, there you go. Too funny. Well, we're winding down anyway, and the year end conversations are going to start to. I know, right?
I know. They're so important.
They are important, and I'll ask you did I ask you yet? Did you weigh in? Everybody's weighing in on the horse of the year debate. There's a daily.
My
discussion.
Favorite part of it was the Twitter thing involving Elliot Walden.
I may have missed this.
It started with that really just absurd comment. Which, to be fair, I didn't read the whole article. I only saw a snippet. Did Tim Layden, Sports Illustrated, make some comment that it was absurd to suggest that it was even a discussion who was horse of the year?
He said, how did Tim phrase it?
I don't want to be unfair because I didn't read it. So, you know,
I think the discussion point actually came from Tim's visit on my show here last week.
He
wrote the article, and he basically was fleshing out that, but
did he suggest that there wasn't a discussion? I'm just curious.
He was somewhat dismissive of debate.
Well, he shouldn't be. That's not fair. There's a discussion. It's okay if you strongly disagree with one side. That's fine. That's what happens in arguments. But there's a discussion because there's clearly a lot of people, and people who are qualified, who think that Accelerate has an argument to be Horse of the Year. And, you know, listen, you know that I've said on your show that people were fooled by randomness in the Triple Crown for a long time. And you know after American Pharoah won, I said on your show that I'd be willing to take any kind of price that we'll have another Triple Crown winner in 5 years.
That's right.
None of this stuff is surprising. You know, 13 horses lost in the bid. There were significant odds on favorites now that were favorites to win it, you know? I mean, they probably should have won it and would have won it if we ran it other times. And there were horses that lost other races. I'm not saying it's an easy achievement, though it's gotten easier because a lot of people don't run back at the Preakness. And I'm not knocking Justify, and I think it's remarkable what he did in a six, you know, in a very short, 4 month period of time. He's a terrific horse, and if he had had a chance to develop, he probably would have been, there's a very good chance that he would have proven to be fast and Accelerate. It's nowhere near as fast as Accelerate, and I think to dismiss what Accelerate did this year, where he had a true Horse of the Year campaign, right? I mean, he ran in every race he was supposed to run in. He had a campaign that started at the end of December and went through the Breeders' Cup Classic, and his only loss was a second to an eventual Breeders' Cup winner. So I don't know how you can suggest that he didn't have a Horse of the Year campaign. Is it possible that you would think that it was the second best campaign? Absolutely. I don't have a problem with that. I'm not trying to knock Justify. I don't think thinking that Accelerate should be Horse of the Year is a criticism of Justify. But I do think that there's an argument that can be made that was, well, it's Horse of the Year, and one horse had a better year than the other one. And, you know, I am somebody that thinks that we put too much emphasis on the Triple Crown. That's just me. I realize the Triple Crown is what the public latches onto, and that's fine. But that doesn't mean that some of us can't have an argument that the other horse deserves Horse of the Year. I'd be honest with you, I'm not sure who I would vote for. I'm not saying I absolutely think that Accelerate should be Horse of the Year, but I think it's a fair discussion. And I think these discussions are good. They're not good when somebody comes out and says, there's no discussion. Well, that's not true. There is a discussion. You know, you can say, I strongly believe that this horse deserves it, and I would never vote for the other horse. That's fine. It's your opinion. But I don't think you should deny other people have a right, especially in this case. You know, this is an argument. So you can make a fair argument for Accelerate, especially given that Justify ran, you know, for such a short period of time and never ran again after June. So anyway, I mean, I'm not, you know, I don't want to make it a big deal, but I, you know, and then I saw that, you know, Elliot Walden, first he's agreeing with him, but then Elliot came out and said, well, if I owed Accelerate, I think he deserved Horse of the Year. So I guess he realized that, you know, frankly, his opinion, I mean, I'm glad he's supportive of his horse, as any owner should be, or anyone connected should be, but so what, you know, I'm not going to believe what the trainer believes just because the trainer believes it or the owner believes it, right? You want to at least have your opinions on your own, don't you?
No, of course. And, you know, it's natural that, you know, when you're,
of course,
you're that,
feel that way.
Exactly, right?
Yeah. Right. I mean, it's, you know, I have friends that own horses. I have a good friend that owns a horse that's in a debate about one of the horses. And you know, I'm going to want to see him win. I happen to believe in the situation that there's a good, fair argument for both horses. So I'm not going to be upset, you know, when what's the Jaywalk, when Jaywalk wins 2-year-old filly, you know, as much as I could vote for newspaper record. But the end of the day, one of the reasons why I don't vote is I do have a bias there, you know, and I'm not sure that I would vote that way if I didn't. I think I would vote for her because I think she's so spectacular that maybe in this case she deserves it. But to suggest that Jaywalk doesn't deserve the 2-year-old filly Eclipse is also ridiculous. We might say that in this particular case, newspaper record was such an exceptional filly that it supersedes Dirt. But until we really decide in this country that, you know, we're going to reward turf horses over dirt horses, I understand especially why Jaywalk would get it. And listen, she ran terrific in both the Brissette and the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Filly. So what else was she supposed to do, right?
Well, exactly. And, you know, and I've been, believe me, I've been, when these discussions have come up, particularly the past 2-3 years, I have been banging the drum for recognizing the two-year-olds on the grass.
Perfect. Right. Well, we're going to say that these Breeders' Cup races in any way are championship races, and we know a lot of it's BS, you know, that it's sort of, you know, it's obviously like the juvenile, you know, the fact that they've now made the juvenile turf sprint a grade two so they can make it a grade one. It is, and you know, I understand to a certain extent cow powing Breeders' Cup, and that's fine. It's not really worth a big argument. But if we're going to say that these races actually are championship races, then let's face it, in a lot of cases, Europeans have come over. Obviously, you know, if the U.S. horse is going to win those turf races, be there for the two-year-old males or the females, they're going to probably do some Euros in there that can run a little bit. So that's a fair. It's if we're going to say those races matter as sort of championship level events, at some point you have to recognize them. And what better horse to recognize than the newspaper record? Me, and no disrespect to Lady Eli and what she did in her career, but as two-year-olds, she was the more exceptional one. What she did was off the charts exceptional. So if you're going to at some point say, either come out and say, these are not championship races, they shouldn't be grade one, they're, you know, whatever, or let's say they are what they are, and let's recognize when an exceptional talent comes along. I mean, let's face it, if Chad Brown had not gone over the Tattersall sales and had not bought some horses over there, Newspaper Record would be running under a different name over in Europe, and any of the people obsessed by European racing or even interested in European racing would say, wow, I hope we get to see X, you know, whatever her name is, you know, that's running over in Europe. I'd love to see her come over here. And she probably wouldn't have, because they don't usually send their best two-year-old fillies, right? Cause especially if Coolmore had her, or Godolphin, right? So it's sort of, you know, let's celebrate that a little bit too, right? So, but once again, you can't argue with either choice. There's merits for both.
Agreed. And the point that has come up so far in this year's debate that is just a little different to some degree than the last couple of years. You go back to most notably the Take Charge Brandy phenomenon, and
when Lady Eli should have been 2-year old champion.
Yes,
and
I voted that way, and then you had even last year, where Caledonia Road comes in and upsets the juvenile fillies, and Rushing Fall was
Rushing Fall was an apt choice. Agree, totally agree.
I voted for her. But the difference here is Jaywalk really has got an authentic resume.
I agree.
That's the difference.
I agree. I'm not. But that doesn't mean that we should, you know, we should ignore and maybe it's time. Maybe it's the right time for people to vote that way. And, you know, the problem, of course, is do we really trust the voters' opinions? You know, if we knew the voters were a select group of 10 or 20 people that we know, and it's not whether we agree with them or not, because there's people's opinions I respect who would disagree with me on both of these categories. But at least people you believe, you know, follow it and have a, you know, there's too many people that'll go, well, I don't even know who these turf horses are. If you won the dirt race, you know, and that's they should at least judge it, at least, you know, feel as though, and you know, we've discussed this ad infinitum, that we feel as though a lot of the voters don't take it seriously, and they've probably opened it up to a pool that is too wide open.
I mean
we could talk about every year.
Well, we could, except when it comes to the horses, when it comes to the equine side, the voting
it's better on the equine side than the people side. I don't disagree.
The human side is just mind-numbing. That people just look at the dollars and as if the earnings were. And frankly, I mean, there's a whole issue with that, given that there's some bizarre skewing of earnings. Right. But even the World Cup,
and not to, you know.
That's right.
I mean,
yeah,
look at Steve Asmussen's earnings, and I'm not suggesting Steve isn't a terrific trainer, didn't have a good year, but to say that, you know, what did he have? He has about $25 million or something, and this isn't about 15 of it or something. First of all, I guess for the winner of the Pegasus, the earnings are fair in theory, but over 50% of it is two races, right?
Yeah, probably. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Gunrunner, yeah. Although.
But, I mean, it's an unusual year for trainers. I mean, the trainers are Chad Brown, Bob Baffert, and X.
Brad Cox.
I mean, it's funny with Steve, and listen, I'm not knocking Steve. I'm not saying that Steve isn't deserving third person there in any respect. I haven't looked at it enough. We're just talking about how the money is skewed because of that. But it's funny in this particular case because it's money earned by a horse that isn't even being considered for any awards. Now, here's a question for you. Gunrunner didn't run in the World Cup, so I'm wrong, right? No, so I'm wrong. The Gunrunner's earnings are only
It was split because of the calendar.
Right. No, what I'm saying is right. You know, here's a question for you: if you had a year with the dirt horses, like you do for the turf horses, and we'll talk about that. I want to talk about that in a second. Could a Gunrunner, you know, could a Gunrunner win older male handicap champion based on one race? See, I think he could. If you had a weird year where a different horse won every major race, right?
Right.
It's just, you know, because, I mean, somebody said to me that they think that the horse that won the Breeders' Cup, that Stormy Liberal is the favorite for the Eclipse for top grass horse. Was that person kidding me? Or is that true?
No, I wouldn't say favorite. A discussion has been launched, and not wrongly. I mean, at least
wrongly, that he's, to me, in my opinion, but okay.
Well, but I mean, to be part
award this year. I think they should
be held in abeyance.
Categories. Yeah. What's wrong with that?
Nah, you're not. Listen,
do you really
yeah.
think, with all due respect, do you really think there's a deserving winner of male turf horse this year?
It's a lean year. There's no arguing that.
Not a year full of particularly talented horses. I don't mean to be disrespectful. I'm fans of some of these horses. Once again, I'm friendly with connections to some of these horses. But let's be honest. There weren't any particularly strong ones. Look at that. We didn't even show up in the Breeders' Cup. I mean, you know, I don't know if there's been a search party out for the U.S. horses in the Breeders' Cup. And, you know, it's just like, why? There's no champion among this group. I'm sorry.
The most consistent, and that's part of the weird thing here, is that the turf sprinters ended up being more consistent and having...
How many races
did
Stormy Liberal run?
Five, maybe? Four?
Four, maybe, yeah. I'm not a buyer. I really, you know, and I think that we're getting to the point where we're starting to pretend that the turf sprint category is a more important category than it is. Now, to be fair, the argument on the other side is, well, we run a heck of a lot of them. Maybe we should be. Okay. All right. I got trouble with it, but okay.
Well, why wouldn't... Well,
listen, we run a lot in New York, so it's not like... I don't know.
Well, you got a grade one, the Jiper. We haven't talked about some of the grading. We haven't had that discussion yet.
I'm not getting into that.
All right. But you're right. It was a year where the males did not particularly distinguish themselves.
The only dual grade one winner is in the turf, right?
What's his name from? Chucky Lawrence's horse.
No.
Oh no, he won a grade one and a grade two.
Right. No, you don't know. It's heart to heart. And that once again, like the connections there, right? Owner's a great guy. Trainer's a great guy. You want to make that horse an Eclipse Award winner? Give me a break. I mean, come on. Not an Eclipse Award winning horse. But he is the only two dual grade one winning male on the turf this year.
That's amazing, actually, when you think about it.
I mean, you're going to give it to the horse that won the Breeders' Cup Mile? All right. I don't know. I don't know that I want to reward anybody out of that race as a champion. What would Alpha Centauri have done to that field?
Well, that's a whole different, that's a different topic.
Not exactly a race that you know. Listen, I realize somebody's going to win it. It is what it is. It's not going to dramatically affect our lives, but this is the stuff that we find important to a certain level, right?
Yeah, agreed.
It's hard, you know, and I'm sure that there are smart people who I respect out there that would disagree with me completely and say we should give a champion all these divisions. Okay. But I got to tell you, I'd have trouble voting in that category. I'd probably abstain in that category.
Yeah, I mean, when you're looking at Channel Makers and Glorious Empire and
right. I mean, I love Channel Maker, as you know. You know, listen, I, once again, Chad Brown's a friend of mine. I'd love to see him win with Robert Bruce, but you really think Robert Bruce should be a champion?
He basically has the same kind of resume.
He and Manhattan and Channel Maker each could have won the Manhattan, but they didn't. And I don't know that we're giving awards based on horses that could have won races but got tough trips. You know?
Yeah.
And do you want to make that argument? Say, well, Channel Maker was on that good, strong inside, and Robert Bruce was trying to rally outside, and Joe Hirsch in an extremely biased situation, right? So maybe Robert Bruce should have won all three of them. So he should definitely be champion. I mean, obviously a silly argument, but it's, you know, that's what you're getting at with that kind of esoterica, right?
Well, I mean, if you're going to get into that, you could, in some degree, say the horse that had the most complete year, and even with a couple of beats,
analyze it.
Sadler's Joy.
Yeah, but he never won anything. So, but yeah, you could argue he should have won the Manhattan. He's, by the way, one of many that should have won the Manhattan. It's a lot of horses. That Manhattan should have. I mean, there was a blanket finish anyway, but clearly it should have been at least a three or four horse dead heat.
Well, but look at that. You know what? Let's actually flesh this out, Andy, and I'm going to tell you why. He made 8 starts this year, which you know puts him in right of you know
rarefied air.
Exactly. He wins the McDarmida. He was 4th in the Pan American. He was 2nd a half length in the Man of War to High Happy. Manhattan
I
beating the neck. Hold on. Bowling Green, a half length.
Race. He didn't win a prestigious race.
Well,
Winning the McDarmida doesn't count as a prestigious win.
Okay.
Is that considered turf?
And then 3rd in the Breeders' Cup. So, I don't know. I'm also an unabashed Sadler's Joy fan. So
I think he's a terrific horse too, and I get what you're saying. What you mean, you're making the point I'm making, which is obviously he's a ridiculous choice, and even in these Clips Awards, it's hard to believe he'll get a vote. But doesn't mean that there isn't an absurd case for him in this particular year, which is more of my point, which is why are we giving anybody this award? I'm not saying that my opinion is the be-all and end-all. It's just my opinion.
You know, and now that we say this, I'm just realizing the ballots haven't gone out yet, the package. Where is it? Good point.
What a tragedy.
Well, it was now. It's always worth having the conversation.
Yeah, no, I agree. And like I said, I'm not disparaging other people's opinions. And there's a lot of people who have very different opinions than me that are highly qualified to have them. And that's great. And that's fine. That's what horse racing is about. You know, there's this misconception that there's something wrong with the argument. Horse racing is all about arguments. That's why I like it.
Exactly.
And yeah, you should believe in your argument. It doesn't mean that you don't have respect for other people's.
I want to slip in a few, just a couple of minutes. Let's slip in a couple of things from Aqueduct the past week. And I'm looking at my notes from my flight home from California.
I am home.
How about the performances, the increasing performances of Ray Gutierrez, the bug, and how about Dylan Davis 4 wins and Louis Reyes 3 the other day?
I wasn't in on Sunday, so I can't really comment on Dylan.
Okay.
Louis Reyes. I mean, listen, these guys are decent riders, you know. Gutierrez obviously shown he can ride, and these bug riders, you know, and Joey Martinez just got back, and we'll see what he does. Louis Reyes, does he have the bug or not? He does have the bug, right?
No,
he doesn't, right? Yeah.
No.
He's a nice guy.
Listen,
they can ride, and it's good to have them here. Don't forget, you know, Kendrick's not back yet. I see that Jose Lozcano's going to stay here this winter. Yeah,
he is. Smart move.
Do well. I'm always happy to it. You know, look, Ray Lou's also got a pretty good jockey agent, right? Jimmy Riccio. So
yes, he does.
That's going to help him too. But Ray Lou can obviously ride. I mean, that was pretty clear from day one. It's not like he's out there doing a lot of stupid things. He can ride. He's going to get opportunities.
It's going to be a fun. It's going to be a fun winter on that.
It's always
side.
A fun winter.
No, I agree. Oh, yeah. And a couple of performances, Vertical Oak, and you know, Nick was with us, of course, on Friday.
Yeah.
You weren't impressed?
I didn't like the way she kind of got such a perfect trip. The race came up reasonably fast, so I don't want to knock her on that. I was surprised they gave it as big a fig they did. I'm not sure what they were doing with the Bavaro race, but I haven't asked Andy about that because it sort of didn't make sense, those numbers. Either Bavaro's way too low or the vertical oak race is too high. Or also Pause for the Cause in there, too. I'm not sure why they decided that horses behind Bavaro couldn't run that much faster, but horses behind Pause for the Cause could, but that's another discussion. Yeah, I mean, she's a very nice horse. She's had a terrific year. This horse, Steve Aspen's done a good job with. Yeah, we'll see if they're leaving her for the winter. And
one performance.
Eddie Barker's horse ran well in there, too.
Yeah, well, she's hot, and she'll have a good winter, Yorkie Poo.
Yorkie Poo, I'm a fan.
How about coming to hand quickly, Jimmy Jerkins with that three-year-old gelding for Mrs. Shields, House Limit. That was a eye-popper.
It's amazing.
I know.
Right?
I get it, but, I mean, the horse has got potential. Jimmy had to wait, obviously. But
it's not like it ran badly in its first start, but I'm not going to get all worked up over a maiden win. Right.
No,
I mean,
he's going to become
Jerry Shields. The late Jerry Shields had two wins on Saturday, right?
Who else won? I missed that.
I can't remember. Right. I guess I could look up the results and probably put them in front of me. Hang on a second.
That's all right.
I can look. It'll take 2 seconds. I feel like I talked about it on TV. It was a while ago, Steve. Lots happened in my life since then.
you lead such a busy, interesting life.
What can I say? You know, just one excitement. Well, I am actually Batman, so you know things do happen.
I love it.
Wait a second.
I'm looking it up too, and I will tell you that House Limit got a 96 fig.
Okay. See, that's another problem. Didn't that horse get the same time as Aaron's horse, Crimson Frost?
They ran. Crimson was faster, actually.
Yeah, okay. And Crimson got around an 80 or something, right?
Yes.
I guess they feel the track really sped up, which maybe it did. Once again, they made the numbers. When did the horse win by? It was Friday. I was thinking it was Saturday. Horse did win by 16. Bad Guy usually runs around a 65. So if you figure what is about 1.8. 27, 30. Yeah, I can see that. They definitely won another race that day. Jeez, I'm like brain dead here. Mitchell Road. Yeah, Mitchell Road, the mod horse that won the seventh race. Yeah. I knew I wasn't completely crazy. I knew it.
No, you're pretty good that way.
Yeah. What else? Jeff Lennon's on it?
We did have, I thought it was good. I can't, obviously, when I'm doing the show, I can't sit in on the morning sessions. The panel that we did, I thought, actually was pretty productive and for the most part. And Pat Cummings really drove home the breakage topic, Andy,
I talked to Pat about breakage quite a bit, as I'm sure Pat would tell you. You know, this is something I said to him when he first started. If you want to find the topic to really work on, it's breakage. I'm glad he is. And listen, I don't think they could have found a more qualified person for that role than Pat. If we could get him to stop tweeting about all the, you know, Far Eastern racing, then we could really, you know, the Asian racing, we could really get him.
We could make some progress.
You start to get the impression looking at his Twitter account that really he doesn't have any interest in the U.S. racing at all. So, you know, other than that, I have nothing but good things to say about that. I do think the breakage issue would be, I think it would be wonderful if racetracks would get behind that. I think, you know, to me, the most compelling argument, there's a lot of compelling arguments. Obviously, the most compelling argument is it's better for horse racing. It's better for horse players, which is the most important thing, but it's also better for the industry, and it's better for us. So, you know, there's no argument against it. It's, you have to convince the states and find a way to make some sort of compromise somewhere. But having said that, it just, you know, if you imagine, to me, to get back to what I think the argument is, if horse racing started this year, there would be no such thing as breakage. we would pay the penny because 90% of the bets, at least, are made online, you know, through betting, through accounts.
Right.
So there's no, I mean, I don't know about you, but my account has 17 cents in it. You know, there's always pennies in the thing because of different payouts, right?
Absolutely.
Different things, you always have it. So the reason they obviously had a breakage was paying people at the windows. And I understand why that happened, but that, just imagine horse racing, this is day zero. There's no breakage. Horses pay, you know, $16.03 to win. And if the argument is, well, we're still going to have that at the windows, well, no. It just means that you always get a voucher, you know, when you cash or whatever, and there's some windows for redeeming it. It's not that many people. Yes, is it a bigger issue at Keeneland and Saratoga and Del Mar? Absolutely. But we can find a solution to that. But the bottom line is that it wouldn't exist in this manner if racing began today, because everything goes through computers. So for that reason, you know, we have been lax probably in pushing forward on this issue. And obviously when Steve Chris got the breakage down to 10 cents in New York, below $10 back 20 years ago, this has returned a lot of money to horse players and to the game. I mean, all this stuff comes down to churn, right? You want to keep the money in circulation. So but I think once again, if you return to the argument that we're doing this based on arcane reasoning from over 100 years ago or 100 years ago, whenever we started parimutuel wagering, then, well, the rest of the world outside of racing has moved on from a lot of things that we do. And this is something that should be changed. You don't keep it just because it was done, you know, like you change it because it was done for other reasons. So it would be great to get the ball rolling on something like this. And I think, you know, once again, if you get the ball rolling, as we've seen with legislation, you know, in the country and other issues, you know, legalization of marijuana, right? So if you get the ball rolling on things, they will have an effect. It'll eventually, you know, change, and I think that's something that should be changed. You know, it's difficult in Pat's situation with the Thoroughbred Ideas Foundation, because it is fair to say, well, why should racetracks be told how they should run their businesses? And so why would they listen to them? Well, they're going to listen if they come up with sound reasoning, with sound solutions. And I think breakage is something you can come up with a solution. And it's in the best interest of everybody. And I love focusing on something like that more than spending a lot of time focusing on disqualification stuff, as we went through for a long time in your show. I think we're spending a lot too much time on that. I'm not saying it's not an issue, but I think that breakage is a far, far, far more important issue, and I think Pat would agree.
Oh, when he put the numbers up, I mean, they were in black and white, and you know, he explained about the thing that is most revealing, that I think that people have missed in the debate too, is that it wouldn't just be great for players, be good for the racetracks too.
Of course,
because
it's a win-win.
The negative
for everybody,
the show pool, the negative show pools.
You have to convince state governments that, and give them some sort of. You have to find something to give up to make it happen. Make it better for the greater good. And, you know, it's good for people. It's you know, and that's at the end of the day, you would hope that they understand the greater good is it's good for, you know, who's the loser, right?
Right.
The consumer is a winner and the industry is a winner.
Exactly.
How is this, you know, how is there an argument against this? I think that's a question that's fair to ask. And it would be great if racetracks could get behind that, and, you know, whether it's us or everybody. I mean, I think it should be a collective effort. And of course, if one racing jurisdiction gets it and another doesn't, it's to their detriment. So
yeah,
it would be an impetus for everybody to want to work together on this, right?
Yeah, it would be.
That would happen because we don't work together. But
well, I mean, there's momentum though that
yeah. No,
could
I
be generated.
This is something that, you know, if I was one of these guys that ran around blowing his own horn about things to do with racetracks, and people I work with know that I've talked about for quite a long time, I couldn't agree more. I think that this is something, and that would be great, you know. And I think from their perspective, from Thoroughbred Ideas Foundation, if they can get behind this and they can find a way to help affect change in this, it gives them the gravitas for people to listen to them on other issues.
That's a great point. If you're looking for something that would garner attention,
you know,
and
I think a guy like Pat, you know, whether or not this concept, which Craig Burnick is obviously behind, and I don't want to slight anybody else that's behind it as well, but obviously I'm familiar that Craig is, whether or not it ends up being effective in any way, they could not have possibly found a better person than Pat. Because not only is he incredibly knowledgeable and bright, but he also doesn't have an agenda. He's not one of these guys that's trying to use this. He could get another job. You know, it's not like this is the only job he could have gotten. He probably could have found a job making more money. He's doing this because he believes in it, and he's qualified, and he doesn't have some personal. It's hard to find. Listen, we all carry around a lot of baggage in this industry, especially the longer you're around. And that includes me. I'm not being critical of others as much as I'm critical of myself. But I think they couldn't have found somebody that has the potential to be more effective than Pat Cummins. And I think that's a great thing. Whether or not it's effective or not, that remains to be seen.
Well, and to close out, too, the Arizona trip, speaking of pals of yours, we got Dan Silver on a chance to talk Dan and his new role at Rockets and what he's doing.
That must have been like the high point of like 2018. I mean, that would be an Eclipse Award winning Steve Bick moment, right? Getting Dan on. Because nothing is like more thrilling than a discussion of Robert's communication, right?
Well, it was actually, we got a few interesting things in. I asked about HD and what has to happen. Why can't some tracks, you know, what's holding them back?
Crazy.
Dan provided
every racetrack is in HD, but they'll blame Roberts. Whether it's true or not, I don't know. We're in HD. That I know. All right, it's 9:50. I gotta go.
We will talk next week for the big year end.
Oh God! Yet another reason to go on living for both me and your listeners. You later.
Andy Serling, everybody. Naira back tomorrow. Aqueduct gets underway. In fact, we're in the seventh, I think, tomorrow, right? Yeah, I think in the seventh with Bell. And you know, I'm going to put up a link. There was a terrific Twitter conversation about conditions, about the condition book and trying to improve field size. It had a whole bunch of contributors. I latched onto it last night, and in fact, Chuck Simon, Chris Rossi was in there. Ed chipped in, and really an interesting back and forth, and one of the more productive discussions. And I bring it up because tomorrow we've been waiting with Carlisle Bell. We've been waiting to get her against State Bred. She's had to run against some open company and straight allowance going short. And we've been looking for a mile race for her. So finally, in the book, there was a mile for New York Bred fillies and mares. But it's these hybrid conditions, 25,000 or non-winners of two, or allowance non-winners of a other than. So it's a catch-all, and essentially it's an allowance race first and foremost. So it's still not perfect. But at least it's at the distance that we'd like her to run. So I don't know. I mean, I think she's 20-1 on the morning line, but it's at least closer to what we've been hoping for. I mean, ideally what we'd love is a 25,000 or 40 in that range. Non-winners of two lifetime for New York Bred fillies and mares going a mile. I've said to Gary 100 times, why would that be so hard of a race to find? I don't know. But anyway, we're in tomorrow. And we ran, and Just Enough Hope ran yesterday. Philly got in trouble, but then came running. And so I was pretty happy with that. That was actually, she had a little hock issue. But she's doing good. So we're going to try to get her a diploma. Back after this, Pete Fornatel is going to join us. Sid Fernando coming up. Sire Watch Pedigree Focus brought to you by Hill & Dale, Seth Merrow, and more.
The latest racing news. It's At The Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest. We know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $100 are on them. That's right. Sign up with ExpressBet.com using promo code XBRadio, bet $100, and they'll deposit $100 back into your account the very next day. Hey, plus you could get an extra $25 if you use ExpressFund direct deposit. You see what I mean? House money for betting the races. It's that easy. Check it out at ExpressBet.com to learn more. And don't forget to sign up for promo code XBRadio. You're going to love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee. Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
There's more good news about Pennsylvania's breeding program. Last year, the number of state-bred live foals rose by nearly 30%. Many other states saw a drop of between 10 and 20%. This says that Pennsylvania truly has North America's fastest-growing and most lucrative breeding program. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at pabred.com.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.